Bringing the Bible to life so that you relate. The world thinks we're rejects, but that word we reject. Watch and we'll show you precept upon precept, line upon line. The script say we're the greatest, and they can't debate it. Salvation is only for the blacks, Hispanics, and natives.
Power, power, it's the one.
Power, power,
it's the who.
Power, power,
yeah, yeah.
Blacks, Hispanics, and natives.
Power, power,
it's the one.
Power, power.
Shalom, shalom. Welcome to the Power Hour, Native Latin and Black Biblical Topics. I am Captain Yahshua.
Shalom, most high in Christ is blessed. Happy Sabbath, Captain Amariah.
The levels always feel weird on this.
One, two, three.
I know, right?
The levels always feel weird.
Hold on, what you call me?
I got you.
Let me see. Test, test. Yeah, that sounds better. All praises, all praises, all praises. Happy Sabbath, happy Sabbath. What I was going to say is when you want to do something with the title, just let me know first before you post it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because that's actually not, like, what you put would have been good if we were going to talk about that, but it's not because it wasn't smoother than butter. That's the point we're going to make.
Okay.
Yeah. When we get into it, you'll understand. It's not about it smoother than butter. It was very blatant when we do the contrast of what we're going to go over today. So,
it was like ironing on a rock.
Yeah, yeah. So you can just normally like hit me back or something like that.
Okay. Okay.
I'll let you know if that's good or not. Anyway, so happy Sabbath. Shalom to the 12 tribes scattered abroad.
Greetings. It's just not the same. Don't do
it. Yeah, yeah, I hear you. I hear you on that. I'm going to go ahead and just kind of share these links real quick. If you want to just talk a little bit about anything in particular.
Anything in particular.
Yeah.
Anything.
Anything.
Well. Which links are you posting first?
Well, no. I mean, like, I'm sharing the thing to the other pages that we're on.
Okay.
Like I typically do. But we're going to talk about, remember last week I spoke about how the double standard, and actually it's part of a crafty council of when the crack epidemic versus mm-hmm. the opioid and heroin epidemic of now, mm-hmm. which is a more elitist or kind of white epidemic when you deal with opioids and heroin
right.
versus the crack epidemic, which was largely our people. The article we're going to read, he talks mostly about African-Americans, but as such is the case, they leave the Latinos out of that a lot, and Latinos were part of that too. I mean, I know because I was in New York City and I grew up during the crack epidemic.
Right. It's funny because I was reading these things last week and a little bit this week, and then they were talking about just that, the crack epidemic and how there's always been these crafty councils behind the scenes to put into our communities to destroy our people. And once they hit our community real heavy with crack, then that's when Clinton introduced the whole thing about the three strikes, you're out thing, going to prison.
Mm-hmm.
So then it increased that school to prison pipeline system. I was reading this article where it's saying that one out of every three minority men by a certain age will have a felony. So that takes away 33% of your voting power anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So people that think that voting is the answer, you don't have a vote anyways when you take away one third of the voting power, even if that was the case. And then, like you said, it's now this new white privilege thing, this opioid epidemic going on. But rather than, lock them up, get them off the streets, it's now this form of compassion that's being shown to them.
Yes, and that's exactly what the article we're going to talk about is going to go into. So You hit the nail on the head as far as that. So you said this was something you were watching that was talking about all that?
It was just like a little, it was a brief, small article. And then when I went back to go save it, I couldn't find it no more.
Wow, okay. I wonder if it's this article, because it's the same dude that we used his article last week. He writes opinion pieces for The Times.
He's good.
Let me see. I think I have a login for this. Let me try that.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It shows you how much this is not our arrest and how blatant these things are put right in front of us. But then again, a gift destroys the heart. So a little bit of illusion of inclusion, or people hold on to that hope of having that equality. It's insane.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's truly the definition of insanity. Our people are the living proof of insanity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, you know what? It's not.
The Blacks, the Natives. I was thinking that we're going to talk about DJ Trump again. Because, I mean, he never
did. I know.
Because that one that you posted just yesterday, I was
He's
like.
He's the gift that keeps on giving.
He really is, bro.
Yeah, I wanted to, because I think I had mentioned that we would go into this a little bit last week. And then I was just like, I mean, it's kind of the same thing, right? Like, because we're going to talk about a form of crafty counsel, but. I mean, because you know what it is? I mean, who knows at the end of the day what the point is of why he would want to, because on the surface it looks like election stuff. And like I was saying, so for those who aren't aware, he went on Fox or Rush Limbaugh's thing or something. Yeah, I think it was Rush Limbaugh. So, and there was speculation prior to him getting sick that maybe he's not really sick and he's going to, like, you know, fake this whole thing to basically then take the vaccine and say, look, it's a cure. And it was going to be, you know, like a lot of the alternative media stuff was saying that, you know, he's going to do that because they want to force the vaccine and there's like genetic altering in the vaccine or whatever. And sure, I mean, they've been doing that anyway. You know, I mean, you wonder why we're so predisposed to certain types of things like high blood pressure and diabetes, meaning largely minority groups, you know, Blacks, Hispanics, so forth. They've been doing that. It's all part of eugenics. So to me, that wouldn't be, I mean, I don't know. I think there got to be something more sinister than that, like behind all that. That's why I don't play too much into that stuff.
Well, I mean, we always talked about it. If we know even on the surface of what they're doing,
yeah,
it's probably something.
Yeah. Well, case in point, they said he was going to take the vaccine and declare it a cure. And instead, basically, he went on record to say that we have the cure and it's that Regeneron antibody treatment that he took. Mm-hmm. So. So it's always something else. So I just figured, I don't know that it's worth a whole show to mention that.
It only took a 47-minute hospital.
Yeah.
And I'm
like I don't know. Like, for me, it feels like more of the same type of stuff. And that's more of, I think the vast majority of our people, they don't relate to that.
Right.
They don't relate to that sort of stuff. Like, that's more like, those of us who have, like, a little more understanding of the way that chess game is played.
Of those that understand the spiritual wickedness in high places.
Yeah, yeah. So I was just like, yeah, but the crack epidemic, that hit home. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of our newer generation, millennials and stuff, they don't understand what that was like and, you know, the stuff that went on behind that. And then you have this thing now with the opioid and heroin. But this is an older opinion piece from 2016. But, you know, now you'll hear you'll hear this stuff with the opioids and everything, and a lot of stuff falls under that. And it's a very, you know, it's a white addiction. Not to say that there aren't, you know, because there were some white people that were on crack, I mean, but it wasn't handled and treated the same. But like you were saying earlier, and this guy mentions it in the article, it was dealt with very different when it was Black and brown people. And it was the war on drugs.
Right.
And by extension, the war on drugs really wasn't what they meant. Again, this was dog whistle stuff, was let's attack the gangs and let's, you know, like they made the convictions for crack. It was like 10 to 1 versus having cocaine.
Yeah, right.
And who was the one most likely to have the crack was Black and brown people. And why was that the case? We're going to touch on briefly the CIA's involvement in that stuff. It was never been proven, but you know how that goes. You know how that goes. It was a long-held belief that they released it into the inner cities, and it was to fund the Nicaragua, the Contras.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically allowed, so they didn't let their, they released it in shithole neighborhoods, is what they would probably call it, to increase sales of it. So they allowed the sales of it. They released it in the inner cities to fund the Contras, which goes back to the, I mean, this is all stuff that we've spoken about on the show, which goes back to the School of the Americas and the United States funding wars by proxy. So basically, they couldn't do it with tax dollars. So covertly, because you would say, well, why the CIA? Wouldn't it be the FBI if they're operating on U.S.? Because CIA is supposed to not operate on U.S. soil. They don't have jurisdiction for that international stuff. Well, you start to understand how it came into play based on the fact that what they were funding. But we'll talk about it a little bit. We'll just read briefly about that in a moment. Just to go to show you the levels of this stuff, right? So on the surface, you're going to see the double standard and how it's treated. And then you're going to see the cause behind why it was handled differently and stuff as far as that. Incidentally, I also wanted to mention, I don't know if I want to, maybe it'll be part of a radio series. Maybe it'll be, definitely be a class series. I started reading a book about, you know, the weak man and, you know, so I forgot what it's called exactly. I can't remember it, but it's pretty good. Like most of it is pretty strong stuff. Like, about like this feminizing and emasculating of men and how men should be and stuff like that. And it was interesting to me because I'm like, damn, this is on point because, you know, it's biblical too. And I see a lot of parallels with the Bible and that, but I got to see how we play it out. But when addiction has a white face is this piece, right? And that's what we're going to call it.
This guy's good. This guy's good.
Yeah. So this is Ikal N. Yanka. Apparently, he is a professor of law, and he teaches at a yeshiva in, I don't know, Columbia, I think. But anyway, so it says, when crack hit America in the mid-1980s, for Africa, and I was like probably, I don't know, maybe around 10 at the height of it, maybe, you know, more or less. So, I remember it explicitly. From a very personal perspective, I mean, so, you know, this is me talking about the Bronx. So I grew up in the projects, and I remember crack vials, empty crack vials in the elevator, in the stairwell, like it was commonplace, like you just saw it. All praises to the Most High. Nobody in, like, our immediate family that I'm aware of ever really got strung out on that stuff, but there was a big fear in regards to it, because as it goes, the reason they talk about crackhead or that stuff is like crack comes from the fact that crack was like super addictive. They said one hit and that was it. You whereas other drugs, it might take you longer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we never really played around with that stuff, although I knew of others who did. And usually you saw them descend into like some, you know, just their whole life was destroyed over it. So it definitely, you know, so the addiction level of it was very scary to us. And like, if you read the chemistry of it and stuff, they talk about how it hits different. And that's why, you know, they say basically one hit and you're hooked. I mean, I remember seeing
one hit and then you're hooked.
Yeah, I remember explicitly, I'm thinking about it now, like crackheads were just like homeless crackheads. And they were probably not homeless. They were probably at one point, you know, working people or whatever. And
oh, yeah, absolutely.
It just descended into that. And they just hopping on the train and lighting up the crack pipe. And then, like, the train car would just clear out because people are like, damn, you know, nobody wants to catch contact over or whatever. They're like, what the fuck, you know, like, the dude is here.
The train car is clearing out in New York, too.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's like, I guess when they could afford a hit, they didn't even want to wait to get somewhere private. So he must have, like, just picked it up, just popped down, sat down, and just lit it up. And people were like, you know, damn, what the hell? And it has a distinct type of smell to it. It smells very chemical and strong. And you could tell by the telltale crack pipe that it was crack. So, but anyway, so it says, when crack hit America in the mid-1980s, for African-Americans, to borrow from Ta-Nehisi Coates, civilization fell. Crack embodied instant and fatal addiction, right? So what we were speaking about. We saw endless images of thin, ravaged bodies, always black. And like I said, this guy, he speaks from the black perspective, but I know personally from growing up in the South Bronx that it was a lot of so-called Hispanics as well that were hit by this.
Mm-hmm.
So it says, always black as though from a famine land. And always those desperate cracked lips. Our hearts broke learning the words crack baby. but mostly crack meant shocking violence, terrifying gangs, and hollowed out inner cities. And this was, you know, the Bronx was pretty jacked up around that time. I speak about it often just to, I don't think people really get the full perspective. And then I think they think it's still kind of like that, and it's definitely not.
No, now it's sober.
Hey, now it's sober. I mean, you know, Morrisania is still one of the worst, I think, in the country areas for like murder rates and stuff like that. But again, you know, I have my theories as to why they allow that stuff to go on and everything. Yeah, it's part of eugenics too, but.
Absolutely, for sure.
But it says, but mostly crack meant shocking violence, terrifying gangs, and hollowed out inner cities. For those living in crack-plagued areas, the devastation was all too real. Children learned which ways home were safe and which gang to join to avoid beatings or worse. And there was a big thing like that. I mean, I was able to largely avoid gangs. My younger brother got caught up with Nietas one time. I almost became a part of the Latin Kings at one point. But it wasn't because I wanted to be, you know, I was a pretty boy, wanted to just, you know, I was into the girls, you know, like that was my thing. So I wasn't into like gangbanging and stuff like that. But it got to a point where, you know, everybody had beads and colors and all that stuff. And it was like, damn, I might need to link up with something to have some clout.
Yeah, right.
I wound up navigating that different where I was just kind of chill with everybody without having any type of affiliation. So, you know, I was funny. So I was kind of known as, I would just, you know, it's like, hey, yeah, you know, good spirited. So everybody had good vibes about me. So it says, children learn which ways home were safe and which gang to join to avoid beatings or worse. Even for those of us African-Americans living at a relatively safe distance, there were soul-bending costs. So, you know, I guess he had a little bit of a different upbringing. So he was saying, you know, he's saying us, they lived at a safe distance from that. City centers and by extension, black neighborhoods were seen in the national imagination as lawless landscapes. So what happened was this crack epidemic created an image of this, they're animals, they're this, they're that, right?
Yep.
So no compassion for addiction like you hear now. Addiction's real and, oh my God, these poor people suffering from these opioid addictions. It's the drug company's fault. It's this, that, and the other. You start to see the hypocrisy of how these things were handled very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And again, part of this is part of that crap. There's so many levels to the crafty council in Psalms 83. And there's a confederacy that allows this type of thing to happen. Let's read that real quick. You were going to bring something out? I see you got Ezekiel open there. Oh, okay. All right. Ooh, Ezekiel.
No.
Just open.
Yeah.
Let's read Psalms 83 real quick so we can refresh that in people's memories.
I'm close to that one now. In the book of Psalms 83 and verse 1. Keep not thou silence, O God. Hold not thy peace and be not still, O God. For lo, thine enemies make a tumult.
Right. So, I mean, by the same spirit that this prayer is coming out, right, because we're entreating God to not keep the silence, to reveal these things in the earth. That's why we bring these type of topics up. That's why I always look for something, you know, versus the Trump thing with the cure, right? Mm-hmm. Which I probably would touch it in another context maybe at some point. I just don't think there's enough. To me, it just seems too political right now. Like, where's the impact on us as a people, right?
Sure.
I mean, especially since it wasn't, maybe they're going to stick it in the, you know, the antibody treatment. Who knows? But it's like at this point, like, what are we going to do against it, right? Like, I was thinking the other day, like, what happens if your school or your job says, you know, the government may not be able to impose that you have to vaccinate or that you have to take these things. But what if private workplaces and schools enforce it? Then what are you going to do, right? So people are going to have to make a choice as far as it, because we're all saying, yeah, let's avoid it. Again, I just pose it as a rhetorical question. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen at that point, you know? But it says, so read that, I'm sorry.
For lo, thine enemies make a tumult.
Right, so it's important that we bring this type of stuff out. And I think especially for millennials, right? And I know we often joke about millennials, but a lot of them don't remember the depths of these type of things. And then when these things kind of return and cycle back, right? Because the scripture tells you there's no new thing under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So when these things return and cycle back, you don't have that familiarity of, oh, this reminds me of this, reminds me of that. It's important to understand. And the tumult is that, listen, every move they make, everything they do, it's always going to be guided against keeping us separated from the Most High God, right? Because they know that if we're not in that, if we're not keeping those laws, statutes, and commandments, then they're going to be able to continue to exert their power and authority over us. Right, exactly. So it says, go ahead, read on.
and they that hate thee have lifted up the head.
And it says, and they that hate thee, and it mentions all those. I mean, we've gone over this before. They that hate thee have lifted up the head, meaning they've put themselves in a position where they actually think that they can battle the Most High, and not realizing that it's for a dispensation of time that he allows their devices to work. But the scripture also tells us in the end, their devices will fail, right? Come on.
They have taken crafty counsel against thy people.
So here we know this isn't. Some people are like, oh, you know, how could you say it's all about you? It says they have taken crafty counsel against thy people, which are the Israelites. Crafty counsel. And the crafty counsel manifests itself in many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
In many different ways. Is that it on that?
Nope. And consulted against thy hidden ones.
And when they consult, when they have their conferences together, it's against thy hidden ones. This is why when we read later about the crack epidemic hitting inner cities, this was the discussion that they had. They basically were like, hey, well, listen, we need to fund this Contra thing. Well, why don't we do it with drugs?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we don't want our good upstanding citizens to be impacted by this and addiction. So they said, listen, why don't we flood the street where those, you know, Negroes and Hispanics are?
Yep. See, and then the thing that's heavy about this, too, is that when you read the scriptures in Romans, it tells you all things work together for good, right? All things. And as much as the crack epidemic was a terrible thing that happened to our people, Paul reminded us, listen, don't be fooled by the second coming of Christ. First, the 12 tribes of Israel must fall away, and the man of sin must be revealed.
Mm-hmm.
So this hitting our community at rapid rates, and then it being twisted that, okay, get them off the streets, and now it's a form of compassion for them. That's a form of the man of sin being revealed.
Yeah,
that's a crafty counsel being taken against our people.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that goes with that verse 1 in Psalms 83 and 1, where it says basically, don't stay quiet.
Right.
It's the Spirit of the Most High that comes on us to be able to bring these things to people's remembrance and to remind them. You know, they always talk about the Holocaust and never forget. We must never forget the countless, and it literally is countless, because I'm always finding something new from different time periods of stuff that they did to our people. We must never forget the countless acts and things and crafty counsels that they did against our people, because we need to know who that man of sin is,
right,
so that we don't continue to stay asleep. This is part of the way that we wake up. Listen, you can't acknowledge and do what you need to do if you first don't know who the enemy is.
Right.
Right? It's like, well, who is it? It's like you watch those shows where they're looking for a serial killer, or they're looking for the antagonist in the show or movie, and they don't know who it is. Is it this guy? I suspect it's this one. And nothing can be done until you know who the source of this thing is.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you do, now you focus your efforts on that, right? Who's over this? Who's over this conspiracy? Who's over this? Who's over that? And once you're able to see that, you'll start to see how they operate and they flow. It makes it less about skin color. It makes it less about the uncomfortableness that the word racism exudes. More so in our people. They've done a number on our people with that. Oh, that's racist. That's racist. They don't give a crap, these other nations, when they talk about racism. It's blatant with a lot of them. But you fall for this whole unity, we're all one, we all got to unite, love, blah, 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 vote, blah, 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 all this other stuff. And it continues to perpetuate this deep sleep that our people are in. So it's important that we always kind of push these type of things and bring these type of things to remembrance so you can see, because they want you to forget. And they want you to forget, because then it'll let you know who your enemy is. And you got to know, right? It's like the scripture tell you, you know, about the reproach of the heathen, our enemy.
Mm-hmm.
These are just one of the many reproaches that they put upon us. So it says, even for those of us of African American lives, living at relatively safe distance, they were sold dead in cost. City centers and by extension black neighborhoods were seen in the national imagination as lawless landscapes. And they were. It wasn't that they were just seen that way. They were lawless landscapes.
Mm-hmm.
We were warned of a new wave of super predators. I mean, a lot of the movies of the generation tell you that. Boys in the Hood, New Jack City, countless others that were like, you know, you would see and you're like, damn, you know, Juice.
Menace Society.
Yeah, Menace Society, right? More of those focused on the way it was hitting the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't see as many New York-based ones, but that was a reality. And it says, we were warned of a new wave of super predators, right? This was the dog whistle that they used. They called them super predators. Young, faceless black men wearing bandanas and sagging jeans, right? and the addicted, those who preyed on them, and those caught by class, geography, and especially race, were swept together. At the edge of my 12-year-old mind was the ominous sense that no matter how far crack was from my actual life, I was somehow associated with the scourge. And that was by and large the bigger event. So even if you were a suburban Black or Hispanic person, you were swept up in this imagery that was painted against our people because of this crack epidemic. Once again, African Americans were cast as pathological, an indistinguishable and unsympathetic mass. That's, you'll hear terms like they're all animals, good, let them kill themselves. The plight of Black America was evidence of its collective moral failure, of welfare mothers and rock-slinging thugs. And now, later on, we'll read about different things, and it's definitely not to exonerate, our own people and the complicity that we have in a lot of the things that we do to each other, right? I think we kind of first need to maybe address those things before we can outwardly address anything else that's happening. And, you know, the remedy is always simple here at IUIC and on this show. The simplicity in Christ, which is the keeping of the commandments during this grace period that we have, would remedy all our problems.
Right.
Because, you know, let me get Romans 9, I think, where he summarizes, is it verse 10? Where he summarizes the civil laws through the Ten Commandments.
Romans 7.
Is it Romans 7?
Romans 7 and 9?
No, I thought it was 9. I always get it confused. It's 12 and 9, sorry.
The book of Romans, chapter 12, verse 9.
Start at 8.
Verse 8. Or he that exhorted.
13, I meant.
13 and 9.
Gosh. 13 and 8.
13, verse 8. Oh, no man anything but to teach one another. For he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law.
Yours says to teach one another? Mine says but to love one another.
Owe no man anything but to love one another.
Oh, okay.
For he that loveth one another fulfilleth the law.
Right, so this isn't the hugs and kisses love. He's going to go on and expound about the behaviors, because that's just an action of affection. We automatically think love, and we're programmed to think hugs and kisses, and that's going to resolve all problems. Look, when I'm pissed at you for something you did wrong with me, don't hug me, don't touch me. You need to apologize and accept accountability for what you've done wrong. And then we can take the next steps and move forward beyond that. But so that whole premise of just hugs and kisses is love, because that's what they think about when they think about love. So when he says, but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law, now he expounds. Come on.
For this.
So he's saying, because for this way, this is the way. Come on.
Thou shalt not commit adultery.
Come on.
Thou shalt not kill.
Come on.
Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Thou shalt not covet.
So he's mentioning some of the Ten Commandments that deal with loving your neighbor, that this is the type of love that he's talking about. So we wouldn't commit these slights, these offenses against each other. So going back to this whole thing with the way we are with ourselves, right? And listen, when I read Black America, I'm thinking Israel, right? They like to try to separate us and not mention the Hispanics, even the natives, even though, I mean, I did have some native friends here and there, but it was few and far between, but that's a different dynamic. But it's going into, if we would follow these types of simple behaviors, going back to my point that the answer's in the scriptures, then we wouldn't have the issues that we have amongst each other, and we would handle the things that they throw at us differently.
Right. What's heavy, too, is that Christ, in his own words, said, this is the new law that I teach you, that
right.
You should love another, or that you should love your neighbor like yourself. That was never a new law.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be reestablished because it was forgotten to our people.
Right.
How much the more in these last days when we're completely stripped of our heritage? Because when he said that, our people still knew.
And many of us still knew who we were.
Exactly.
Right?
And we still forgot it. So how much the more in these last days when it was completely taken from us?
Right. Absolutely. So he says, and thou shalt not covet. Come on.
And if there be any other commandments.
Hey, and think about some of this. Thou shalt not kill is simple enough, right? If we just had respect enough for each other and fear of the Lord enough for each other, we could largely reduce by ourselves. We don't need no police action. We don't need no counselors in the community. Just the fear of God that's missing and the lack of love for each other, lack of
compassion and natural affection. And just by the mere fact of thou shalt not kill, how much the black on black, brown on brown, black on brown, and vice versa, murder rates will go down.
Right.
Because they use that as a deflector for when we say how they kill us. And in some respects, right, we have to agree with that and say, well, yeah, we make a big uproar when others do it, but not amongst ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But that still doesn't make an excuse for their behavior and what they do, right? But they use that because we're not blameless, and it changes, and it's a distraction, and it changes the focus of how they see us and what they do to us. Because they're like, well, you're animals. You're a mass of super predators without law and order. So if we would just respect the thou shalt not kill, we respect the thou shalt not steal. We would not mug each other. We would not rob each other. Right? Thou shalt not bear false witness. We would not lie on each other. Thou shalt not covet. How many times, I remember getting jumped. They had posses, is what they would call it back in the day with us, posses. And you would get jumped for your starter hat.
Yep.
But I'll never forget, man, I was coming back from the movie theater with a few of my friends. We walked past the bowling alley on Gun Hill Road. And that thing was jacked up over there, right? And a posse came out, and I had my starter Yankee hat. I had my starter Yankee jacket, right? I remember the starter stuff was the move back in the day. Looking all fresh. I remember my grandfather had bought it for me, and, you know, he didn't have a lot of money. You know what I'm saying? He was on a fixed income. But he hooked me up, right, and he bought it, and it wasn't cheap. I mean, that's probably nothing now. At that time, I think the jacket was like $120. It wasn't even like, it was like the little windbreaker type.
Yeah.
But it was nice, bro. It was like airbrushed on, real dope, with the Yankee symbol and everything. Right? And the hats, I think hats go for like upwards of $30, $35. Now, they're probably about $18, $20 back then. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot of money for back then.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I remember I had my Yankee stuff or whatever, and these dudes came out because they wanted to rob us of that stuff. You know? So that's covetousness. Right? So if we don't covet, then you avoid all these types of things. And you see how they each lead to more and more stuff, right? And then he goes on and he says, and if there be any other commandment. He's not saying if as if he don't know. Remember, Paul was a doctor of the law. But he wasn't going to take this whole letter to start rewriting what the law says to you on personal conduct with each other.
He's not going to take the whole letter to describe what can be chiefly comprehended in this next
chapter. Right, exactly, which is what he's going to say, right? And if there be any other commandment, because there is,
briefly comprehended in this saying.
So he says, I'm going to briefly make you understand it. Comprehension is another way to say understanding, right? Come on.
Namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself.
He says, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, giving you a new understanding of what that really means. And letting you know, basically, you don't necessarily need to go line by line in the law if you just have in your mind, am I loving my neighbor as myself by this action?
Right.
Right? Read on verse 10.
Verse 10. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor.
Right? So the hypocrisy of the hugs and kisses is that you have two-faced people who will hug and kiss you, but then still do some of these things, right, behind your back. And he says, so love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Come on.
Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law.
So love is the fulfilling of the law, right? So now when you go back over here and it talks about the plight of Black America as evidence of its collective moral failure, the morality should come from the scriptures, right? There's another scripture that says, this is your wisdom in the sight of the nations. It's a real simple fix, but back to my point, this is why their target is us and to keep us from this type of behavior, because they know the power that we would have. They've seen it in small blips with things like in Tulsa, Oklahoma, right, with Black Wall Street. They've seen it throughout historically when we've had little power, right? But not without the scriptures, of course, right? During the Dark Ages, right? Many of our people were in rulership, but it wasn't with the commandments, right? Which is why it only lasted for a dispensation of time. When we were seen as the Moors or the Latinos. So it says, a reason to cut off. Blacks would just have to pull themselves out of the crack epidemic. So this was their approach to this, that we would have to pull ourselves out of that epidemic. Until then, the only answer lay in cordoning off the wreckage with militarized policing.
Yep.
And that's what they did. They were like, listen, let's just make sure it doesn't seep over into suburban white neighborhoods.
Bro, they're hitting Black and brown communities with literally army tanks.
Yes. Yes, in some areas it was that extreme. It says the dormant carrier of this ill-defined disease, harboring a mix of criminality and violence, was the young Black male, right? Because that's how they looked at it, as a disease that, we got to cordon them off because that'll spread to our communities.
Right.
By my high school years, there was no doubting the danger strangers saw radiating off of me. When I was in college in the early 1990s, my short dreadlocks meant older women would cross the street to avoid me. It was more than your dreadlocks, bro. It was the fact that you were a black man, right? It says 30 years later, America is again seeing an epidemic of drug addiction, particularly heroin. And like I said, this was in 2016, but you're also seeing the opioids now. You hear a lot about that. The surge is so great that for the first time in generations, mortality among young white adults has risen. So normally the mortality rate is much higher amongst our people. Mm-hmm. And that's because of the multitude of these crafty counsels that they put against our people and the lack of regard that we have for each other, right? We don't love each other. We have ill will towards each other. So they track these overall mortality rates. Mortality rates among white people, even though we may experience some of the same things, the one thing that you don't experience among white people the most is things like addiction and things like crime, like murders against each other. Outside of your serial killer type of craziness that they do, which is almost exclusively a white phenomenon.
I wouldn't say almost.
Well, there might be. You know, I say that to hedge myself.
No, yeah. Because
then
yeah,
you'll have
sure.
some more
yeah.
that'll find like the one case where it was like a Hispanic or black person.
Yeah.
But so, you know, that's like when they tell you something is 99.9% effective.
Yeah, right.
Like to avoid.
9 out of 10 doctors.
Right.
Recommend. Okay.
So
right.
so I say it's almost exclusive. Things like serial killers and those you know, people that eat other people and all, you know, all that stuff like that. That's almost exclusively a white thing. But it says, but the national attitude towards drug addiction is utterly different. So now that the drug addiction epidemic is amongst white people, they're not saying cordon off the suburbs. They're not saying that they're super predators and it's eliciting this, that, and the other. And yeah, some people say, well, we don't behave this way when it's like this and it's like that. We got when we talk briefly in a little bit about the dynamics of why and how this went on, and then you couple that with our we were a prime target for them because they knew that the domino effect that it would create. It helped them fund the Contra War, but at the same time, it put us in a state where Romans 13 and 9, 8 through 10 couldn't be applied.
Right. Right.
So it was a double whammy for them. But still, the attitude changes when it's addiction amongst white people or even any other race that's not black or Hispanic. So it says, even Republican presidential candidates are eschewing the perennial tough on drugs speeches, meaning they're not talking about let's be tough on drugs, and they're opening up about struggles within their own families, right? So, like, I think it wasn't like one of Biden's son, he had, like, cocaine addiction or something like that, amongst other things. It says, more important, police chiefs in the cities most affected by heroin are responding by not invoking military metaphors, weapons, and tactics, but by ensuring that police officers save lives and get people into rehab. But they didn't do that when it came to the crack
mm-hmm.
epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, let's get them into rehab, let's save lives, let's get community people involved to get them off these drugs.
No, it was actually literally the exact opposite.
Well, no, they needed it to keep flowing, and we're gonna switch gears to that in a minute. It says, as one former narcotics officer described his change of heart on addiction, there are people, these are people, and they have a purpose in life. And we can't, as law enforcement, look at them any other way. My God, if law enforcement, if everybody, because not all law enforcement, we have brothers and sisters that are in law enforcement. It's not everyone, but the ones that it's blatant and the disregard they have for us, which is just too much that you see to deny that there is an issue with that. If they all just had this in their heads when it came to us, they don't. They have an inability to look at us, black and brown, the Israelites, all right, and say that we are people and we have a purpose in life. If not, you wouldn't have the rates of the shootings that you do, the rates of the way they police us, right? I still have my articles on the whole policing by a former cop, and now I think he's a lawyer, that talks about how black and brown communities are definitely police different, that I never went over for the show. But he says, listen how this guy talks about it when it's white people that are addicted. These are people, and they have a purpose in life, and we can't, as law enforcement, look at them any other way. So when addiction has a white face, they're people. They're not animals. They're not let them kill each other, right? And as law enforcement, they have to look at them like they have a... So what he's telling you is that when it comes to us, we have no purpose in life.
Right.
And we're not people. He says, in his inability to name the change that allowed this epiphany, His words also capture our cringeworthy self-denial. So basically, this same individual was not able to express why his mindset had changed when it came to addiction now versus when it came to opioids. But we know what it was. Suddenly, police officers understand crime as a sign of underlying addiction, requiring coordinated assistance rather than a scourge to be eradicated. Oh, all of a sudden, when the face of addiction is white, they get it. It is hard to describe the bittersweet sting that many African Americans feel witnessing this national embrace of addicts. It is heartening to see the eclipse of the generations-long failed war on drugs. But Black Americans are also knowingly wary and embittered by the absence of such enlightened thinking when those in our own families were similarly wounded. And it's still to this day. When the face of addiction had dark skin, this nation's police did not see sons and daughters, sisters and brothers. They saw brothers, young thugs, to be locked up rather than people with a purpose in life. To be clear, no one laments the violence that the crack bomb set off in inner cities more than African Americans. But while shootings, beatings, and robberies cannot be tolerated anywhere, the heroin epidemic shows that how we respond to the crimes accompanying addiction depends on how much we care about the victims of crime and those in the grip of addiction. And we know that they don't care when it comes to us. You want to bring something up?
No.
White heroin addicts get overdose treatment, rehabilitation, and reincorporation, a system that will be there for them again and again and again. Black drug users got jail cells and just say no. And when we bring up the picture, when we read about the crack epidemic briefly in the Wikipedia article, you're going to see that was I remember where that was. It's a handball court wall. I remember where it is. It's around 110th Street on the east side. And I used to drive by it all the time. So I remember where that was. And one of the things, that was the thing for us. Just say no. No overdose treatment, no rehabilitation, just say no. And militarized policing. It would be cruel and perverse to seek equal abandonment of those now struggling with addiction as payback. And it would. But guess what? God is not unrighteous to forget. So let him be cool and let him do that stuff. I'll just say that before people try to hang on to that stuff. So it says, basically he's saying it would be cruel and perverse to see them treated the same way as us. I get it, brother. I know they might not print your article if you don't say those type of things. As payback for the fears of the 80s, nor do I write in mere hopes of inducing cheap racial guilt. The hope, however vain, is that we learn from our meanest moments. Even today, as Black communities face pressing problems of addiction and chronic unemployment and the discrimination in hiring that helps to perpetuate it, many are dedicated to ignoring racial prejudice. And it is. By and large, that's everybody's argument nowadays, is that we're overblown and racism doesn't exist anymore. Faced with searing examples of unconscionable police violence against unarmed Black men, and I know he focuses on the police violence, and it has been crazy. But, I mean, come on, look at what's going on in Chicago, right? Look at what's still going on in L.A. and different parts of California that's not spoken about. Of concocted justifications laid bare by video, too many still speak of isolated cases and overblown racial hysteria. With condescending finger wagging, others recite the deplorable statistics of violence within poor minority neighborhoods as though racist policing were an anecdote or excuse. And this is my point. They grasp on to the way we are with each other for their rationale and how they police us. And that's evil as hell. And it goes to show you that their spirit ain't right. Yes, it's not right that we're like that. But that's why we here at IURC are here to tell you the answer is in these Bibles.
That's right.
Look at how such a simple scripture in the book of Romans, three verses, could solve all those ills if we had any type of respect unto that. If we had any embracing of that type of behavior, you would see a drastic reduction in disregard we have for each other's lives and for each other as brothers and sisters. So it says, both responses ignore that each spectacular moment of unjustified police violence represents countless instances of institutionalized racial control across generations. And that's really the bigger overarching thing. This isn't a new thing. This is institutionalized racial control. And you have some that will try to argue and say there is no institutional racism. It's easy to sit there when they're not in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being able to experiencing it for them to make those kind of assertions. No sane community faced with addiction and crime would invite or acquiesce to brutal policing as their fee. And no moral community would impose it as a primary response. We do not have to wait until a problem has a white face to answer with humanity. I think it's very telling. You see the hypocrisy and how that stuff is laid out. So Let's talk real quick. Let's give a little background about the crack epidemic. See the crack is whack mural? I remember where that was. That's a handball wall. And somebody went and they did it. New York City, 1986. I was nine.
Which one's that? Which picture?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go to the Wikipedia. Scroll down. You'll see the picture there. Yeah, the crack is wet. That's the FDR Drive on the left there where that car is. So this is right off of 2nd Avenue and 110th over there. Crack is whack. I remember that. You saw a type of murals going up like that all over the place. But our people were hooked for the nature of what it was, right? There you have a picture of the crack rocks. So they would sell like one rock. That's how you got your hit. Maybe one with a little smaller one in there, right? So let me just read briefly. I'm not going to go too much into this part of it. It says the crack epidemic in the United States was a surge of crack cocaine use in major cities across the United States between the early 1980s and the early 1990s, right? So you're talking about expanded over a decade. This resulted in a number of social consequences, such as increasing crime and violence in America inner city neighborhoods. And inner city is code talk for where blacks and Hispanics are, as well as a resulting backlash in the form of tough on crime policies. In 1986, the U.S. Congress passed laws that created It was a 100-to-1 sentencing disparity for the possession of or trafficking of crack. So that means that if you were caught with one crack rock and someone else was caught with, like, let's say a kilo of coke, your sentence would be more severe for the one crack rock. When compared to penalties for trafficking of powder cocaine, these were criticized as discriminatory against minorities, because it was. Mostly African Americans who were more likely to have access to crack than powder cocaine. It was cheaper. Cocaine was like a celebrity drug.
Yeah, right.
Right? You see that like in movies like Scarface and Blow and things like that. So it was like a upper status elite type of drug with the cocaine. You see it in movies where the parties, they were sort of Die Hard, you know, the dude that was in there was sniffing his coke, right? But if it was a party like the Get Down in the Bronx, it was a crack rock instead because it was cheaper. But look at that, 100-to-1 sentencing disparity. So that means if, like, for the equivalent in cocaine, if they got a year, you would get 100 years for having crack. That's crazy. I don't know if I want to get too much into the rest of that part of it. Hold on. Okay. Jump down, scroll down where in history it says according to, keep going. All right. So right there, according to the 1985, so it says according to the 1985-1986 National Narcotics Intelligence Consumers Committee report, gosh, that's a mouthful,
yep.
The NNICCR, crack was available, check out the cities, Los Angeles, New Orleans, Memphis, Philadelphia, New York City, Houston, San Diego, San Antonio, Seattle, Baltimore, Portland, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Detroit, Chicago, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Milwaukee, St. Louis, Atlanta, Oakland, Kansas City, Miami, Newark, Boston, San Francisco, Albany, Buffalo, and Dallas-Fort Worth. All cities that are predominantly black and Hispanic.
Right.
This was a targeted distribution of this drug. This was a targeted distribution. You know how we look to go to the chief places of concourse where our people are at to teach the truth? They went to the chief places of concourse where our people are at to get them hooked on crack.
Yeah, actually, I got a scripture for that.
Go ahead.
This is the book of Psalms, chapter 10, and I'm going to read verse 2 first so we know who it's talking about. It says, "The wicked in his pride doth persecute the poor. Let them be taken in the devices that they have imagined." This is them going back into that twofold, everything else to get. But the point is the wicked, right?
Yeah.
Verse 8, "He sitteth in the lurking places of the villages, in the secret places that he murdered the innocent, his eyes privily set against the poor." There it is right
That's
there.
That's heavy. His eyes were privily set against the poor. They went and they focused, and this goes with that crafty council, and they said, let's release this in those cities.
Mm-hmm.
In those cities. Oh, sister says, this is your brain on drugs frying egg commercial. I do remember that.
Right, it'll say Scottsdale, Beverly Hills, all those things where their people were at. It's crazy.
So there's a few things here. It says that it originated in Colombia, and then it came through the Bahamas and the Dominican Republic into Miami, and then from there it would be distributed in all these major cities where our people were. Hold on, I want to see if there's anything else by here. No, I don't want to get into that. This is some good reading here for the sentencing disparities and all this other stuff. Get me the one that says CIA involvement in contra cocaine trafficking. This is in relation to this because I told you this was targeted, so it was a double whammy, right? So they wanted to they're gonna say alleged because they weren't they never found anything, but of course they wouldn't, right? They find themselves not guilty. It says a number of writers have alleged that the United States Central Intelligence Agency was involved in a Nicaraguan Contras cocaine trafficking operation during the 1980s Nicaraguan Civil War. These claims have led to investigations by the United States government, including hearings and reports by the United States House of Representatives, Senate, Department of Justice, and the CIA's Office of the Inspector General, which ultimately concluded the allegations were unsupported. The subject remains controversial. Of course they were going to, Did you think it was going to go any other way? The subject remains controversial. A 1986 investigation by a subcommittee of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, the Kerry Committee, found that the Contra drug links included, among other connections, payments to drug traffickers by the U.S. State Department of funds authorized by the Congress for humanitarian assistance to the Contras. In some cases, after the traffickers had been indicted by federal law enforcement agencies on drug charges, and others while traffickers were under active investigation by these same agencies. The charges of CIA involvement in contra cocaine trafficking were revived in 1996 when a newspaper series by reporter Gary Webb in the San Jose Mercury News claimed that the trafficking had played an important role in the creation of the crack cocaine drug problem in the United States. Webb's series led to three federal investigations, all of which concluded there was no evidence of conspiracy by the CIA or its employees to bring drugs into the United States. It wouldn't be crafty counsel if they did get caught.
Right.
This is why it was done in secret. Get the one that I showed you that shows the actual, it should have been a picture of the, So this is one of the documents for the hearings that were held. Allegations of a CIA connection to the crack cocaine epidemic. Hearings before the Select Committee of Intelligence of the United States Senate, the 104th Congress, second session, on allegations of a CIA connection to crack cocaine epidemic, Wednesday, October 23rd, 1996, all the way to November 26th. Keep scrolling. You'll see this is a stamped facsimile of the actual document. I think it's 100-some-odd pages. Keep reading. Keep scrolling. I don't know if that's a blank one. Go ahead, keep going. It's 106 pages. Maybe if you scroll instead of putting a number, are you scrolling?
Yeah.
There we go. And basically, if you're into reading this stuff, this talks about, but see down there it says the Mercury News, the San Jose Mercury News series, and it talks about how this stuff came to light because of that, right? Hold on, go up. There's a lot of little excerpts on here, which will make for an interesting. I didn't read the whole thing. It makes for an interesting read if you want to see some of the stuff there, and you can decide for yourself how this was laid out. So essentially what this is saying is that the Contras initially were supported. This goes back to the School of the Americas stuff, right? We're almost done here with this. It goes back to the School of the Americas stuff that we've spoken about on here, where the School of the Americas was set up to influence dealings in Central and South America. It's known as Central and South America and the Caribbean. And what would happen is their justification was this is the bordering country that's so close to us, and we cannot have people that are not aligned with our interests in power in these places, especially because they had large natural resources in a lot of these places that they could have been very well funded, and they saw the U.S. saw it as a threat to them. And what would happen here, I brought this out with the documentary Harvest of Empire, is also the book, and it talks about how these proxy wars and these espionage type of things where if they did not support a certain leader or someone in power, you kind of see it on the surface now in Venezuela where they're supporting the, I can't remember the other guy's name, and they're acknowledging him as the true president and not the other guy. And what they don't tell you is the stuff that they're doing behind the scenes for that. Remember, they not too long ago, they caught some supposedly private mercenaries that were going in there, and they went to assassinate this dude. And what happens is they disavow you. It's like Mission Impossible. Hey, if you get caught, we're saying you weren't affiliated with us. That's real shit. That, like, really happened.
Absolutely, for sure.
So what happened with the School of the Americas is you look at all these different despots and whatnot, and they didn't always start out that way. These guys were the ones that the United States would support. And, you know, they would say, well, it was it's their own people doing these atrocities to their own people. But the part that they leave out is that these guys were trained in the School of the Americas. And they were trained in these torture techniques and how to do these things to their people to obtain power and take down the opposition. And whenever they wanted to change it, they would support the rebels that were against them.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what they mean by proxy wars. We couldn't go in because of international stuff on our own. You can't send United States troops in there. It would send the wrong message. So how about we support the ones that are there? Let's support them with weapons. Let's support them with funding to do different things. And one of the ways they would wash and funnel this money was by making payments to these what turned out to be drug traffickers. So the Contra would then sell drugs in the United States to then fund their missions, and they would allow it to happen. And this is what happened with the crack cocaine epidemic. This is it in a nutshell. It's a lot more sinister when you read it in more detail. And essentially, they were like, well, yeah, let's release the drugs in the United States. People have money and so on and so forth. And then by turn, we'll have an unlimited source of money that we don't have to get approval, less records in Congress for these type of payments. So there might be a handful of payments to get it started and funded. And then, by and large, the money, the billions that would come through, would be from allowing them, basically, let's kind of support them and help and turn a little bit of a blind eye to what's going on here, and they'll support our interests in supporting the army in the Contras. And they did it by releasing it, like you saw in that other one, in those targeted cities, and then they never wanted to fix it. That's another reason why you don't get the compassion of rehabilitation. It funded a decade-long war to overthrow the government in Nicaragua, and this is why you saw everybody on board with helping those militarized police actions against it, and it wasn't, let's try to clean up the crack in the community by offering rehab and rehabilitation.
Right.
They wanted it to keep flowing, and they figured, why not them? Because they're not people with a purpose, unlike the other guy said. And that's the levels of their evil and their sinister way to kind of traffic and fund their initiatives on the low. So it's real. Like, if you think about it, it's kind of real chilling stuff. Like, I think a lot of times we walk around thinking that they won't do stuff. And in a way, it's kind of telling now, because while there's a lot of theories floating out there with the COVID and how it's disproportionately affecting us, and, you know, how they're saying, let them get the vaccine first, let them get this medicine first and stuff like that. I mean, I'm sure there is something very sinister behind it. I don't doubt it. I mean, that's why I say things like this got to be brought to remembrance because, you know, I mean, they've done it before. They've done it in different ways before. We spoke about sterilization recently. We spoke about how this was actually on the books and law. We showed documents for that. Everybody talks about the Tuskegee Airmen as one isolated incident. And that was actually more the norm. That was just one that was kind of more out there and got some notoriety behind it.
Right.
So there's always some sinister stuff going on behind the scenes. That's why I say that Psalms 83 is real heavy. It's not just let them forget who they are and whatever. It's still being perpetuated to this day based on that type of stuff. So we got to be mindful and we got to return to these laws, right? Like, just like we brought out in there. I think really it does start with ourselves. And if we can come together and get ourselves together under the banner of this Bible and keeping the commandments and the faith of Christ, then we'll wind up in a better place in preparation for what's to come. Not to say that, you know, in this present world, our warfare is not physical, it's not carnal, it's spiritual. And we need to continue to focus on the spiritual and wait on our Savior.
Yeah, right. When you read in the book of Psalms, I believe it's the 17th chapter, the Lord says that he's going to use the wicked, which is Esau, as the sword to punish us for our iniquities, right?
Mm.
When you read in here in Jeremiah 17, verse 4, it says, and thou, even thyself, shalt discontinue from thine heritage that I gave thee, and I will cause thee to serve thine enemies in the land which thou knowest not. For ye have kindled a fire in mine anger, which shall burn forever. So that anger is the sword that's being used against us, that dispensation of time, until we come back and start serving the Lord with sincerity and truth. So this stuff happened in the mid-80s to the mid-90s. That's every single person that is watching this right now was alive during this time. This is new. This is a new thing in the earth. But that sword is still being used against us because we still have not returned unto the Lord wholeheartedly.
Yeah, you said something heavy there. I'm going to bring that out in the New Testament. I'm going to read Romans 13. I'll read it real quick.
Mm-hmm.
I'll read one, and then I'm going to jump to verse 4. He says, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. So even though this evil that we just brought out and that we read about, that's ordained of the Most High God.
Right.
Right? And he says, if you resist the power, you resist the ordinance of God. But then he also goes on in verse 3 to say, for rulers are not a terror to good works. This is why I say we don't have to take a physical action. If we take the spiritual action, those of us that are ordained, we're going to be okay. It says, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. So basically, if we got ourselves together, guess what? They won't be able to help themselves but to praise us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's condescending, we see it when we... Like, I always talk about how when we are tapping, I said, wow, you guys are so calm. I'm like, are they saying that to, you know, 500 white people that are camping together?
Nope.
Or you're saying that because you see a bunch of blacks and Hispanics together? But here's verse 4, and this goes with what you were saying, how he says he uses them as the sword. Paul says the same thing here in Romans 13 when he says, for he is the minister of God to be for good. So the powers that be, the magistrates, the leaders, right, even though they're of the other nations, he says that's a minister of God. And he's there for our good if we do good. But then he says, but if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain.
There it is.
For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. So you got to understand, these other nations are set up over us as part of our condemnation, as part of our discontinuance from our heritage, like you just read in Jeremiah 17. And that's prophecy fulfilled right there, to see that you're not allowed to police yourselves. I have to set up these other nations to be over you, right? So letting you know that these other nations are ministers to us to do that type of evil on us. And it's not saying it's always deserved. That's the sin in them, is that they exceed.
Yep.
They exceed past what their purpose is because of the hatred in their heart. So... I pray y'all get some understanding. I pray y'all able to take things like this and use as an example to those of your friends and family and others out there that think this Bible is a fairy tale and that we're crazy for what we're teaching and what we're pushing. When in reality, our goal and our aim is to always show you that this Bible is a true book, a real book, and it's still very relevant today and very applicable for us to get back on it.
That's right.
So that's the show. And with that, we say shalom.
Shalom.
Is that good? Keeps it cold?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one is at work.
Yeah.
I hang it on my forklift and I just take it around the other.